You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
When it comes to our privacy laws in Aotearoa, according to experts, we may be lacking behind. I spoke to Associate Professor of Commercial Law at the University of Auckland and convener of the New Zealand Privacy Foundation's Surveillance Working Group, Gihan Gunasekara, about why he believes we need to pressure politicians to keep our privacy laws current, especially when it comes to children. I started off our interview by asking Gunasekara about his work with the Privacy Foundation's Surveillance Working Group.
My role here at the university is I'm an associate professor in commercial law at the business school, but I have been a member of the Privacy Foundation from the time it was set up in 2017, and in fact I was one of its founding members, and I was one of the instigators of the Privacy Foundation. And the foundation is really a not-for-profit organization set up as an advocacy group to basically push the privacy agenda, because we often hear the agenda on the other side of businesses that want to collect more information, the government that wants to collect more information, but there wasn't a civil society outfit that really advocated on behalf of ordinary people, and that's what the foundation is supposed to do.
And when it comes to our privacy laws here in Aotearoa specifically, where do you think we could be doing better?
Well, at one time we led the world. People may not be aware of this, but in 1993 we had a Privacy Act, one of the first countries in the world to pass a comprehensive data privacy law. And it was hailed as a world leader at that time, but then we just let things slip. And it was only in 2020 that a modernized act was passed, keeping the same framework that we had in 1993 that people are familiar with, the information privacy principles and so on, but updating them to take account of, you know, more recent global trends, big data, the greater sort of the fact that most businesses now are conducted online. In 1993, the internet hadn't even been really, wasn't really much of a thing in 1993. So we made some progress in 2020, but we still lag a long way behind other countries like Europe with its GDPR, which most people might have heard about, the European Privacy Regulation. And the more recent trends have been coming from U.S. states. So U.S. itself is lagging, but it's some of its states, like the state of California, has really been leading the way with, they've got a California Age Appropriate Design Code Act, which is targeted at protecting children. And that's something I think we in New Zealand could do a lot more to protect our tamariki from the predations of these global platforms, you know, like Twitter and TikTok and so on.
What should people, and as you mentioned, parents whose children use social media, be aware of when it comes to what big tech might be doing with our personal information?
Well, this is the concern that, you know, countries that are leading here, like California, which I mentioned, and the United Kingdom's Information Commissioner's Office, and the United Kingdom also has a code which creates best practice for internet businesses. But people need to be aware of the fact that children are vulnerable. They don't often understand the implications of giving away their data. For that matter, adults don't often fully understand what they're doing. But when it comes to children, there is a danger that you know, we don't know how that data is going to be used to manipulate the child, to change their behavioral preferences. This is the whole idea to shape people. And, you know, the old saying, if you get a child by the time they're seven or whatever, you have the adult. I think these internet platforms have latched onto that, and they realize that if you can get a child hooked on something and then you've got them for life. You've got it's. I suppose it might be too strong a term to describe it as a form of addiction, but we know children get. Gaming is a major addiction, but there are other things that children can get addicted to. And social media is, I think, the big reason why the current government wants to ban the use of mobile phones, to ban the use of cell phones in schools altogether. And that's a pretty blunt instrument, but it would have the effect of stopping people being on social media during school hours, which I think is actually quite a commendable thing. I don't agree with many of the new government's policies, but that policy, I think, you know, it's a crude instrument, but it does tend to have that effect of protecting children from themselves, in a sense, because there is this addiction that once you're on social media, that takes priority over everything else.
Do you have any concerns that banning phones in schools or limiting social media access will make children perhaps more secretive about their social media use and more at risk of some of those harms of being exploited?
There is always a risk. I mean, to be fair, there is always a risk. But I mean, people can still do their social media when they're at home or outside of school hours. I think the concern is that social media can be used for a whole lot of, it can be used for good purposes, but it can also be used for bullying. It can be used for, all the things that we hear about that teenagers and young people are exposed to, that they may not really fully understand themselves the implications of their own conduct. So this is the reason why countries are moving towards asking for best practice in terms of steering children away from certain harmful conduct.
Do you have any advice, just lastly, for people who might want to be more vigilant about where their data is being used? Are there any steps people can take to protect themselves?
Yes, so I think in the first place, people shouldn't just automatically click I agree or I accept the terms, and it's too easy to do that. Now, I realise that most people, and this has been empirically proven by researchers, that people can't really even comprehend some of the terms and conditions, which sometimes go to thousands of pages. And so the very design of these platforms of social media and online services is designed to confuse you and prevent you from really having genuine consent, which is why I think we need to lobby politicians to have codes of practice aimed at certain industries to force them to have better practices, because expecting people, even adults, to read thousands of pages of terms and conditions, or thousands of clauses rather, it's simply not realistic. So that's the one thing. But I think adults at the minimum should check to see who information is being shared with. So, just tick off a couple of things. You don't need to read all the terms and conditions. See who the information is being shared with and whether the purposes go wider than the actual the service. So, to access a particular service, sure, there are some types of information that you would need. Like a crude example would be you order something online, you've got to give your address for delivery. I mean, that's obviously necessary. But do they need to know other things? Like, do they need to know your location when you travel? Do they need to know who your friends are? So, think carefully about the kinds of information that we're giving away and try and restrict it. And when appropriate, say no, I'm not going to. And then it's up to the service to say, well, in that case, we're not going to provide you the goods or services. But push back. So my advice to people is push back. Don't just accept and always click yes, I agree.
Came in a little early there. That was Associate Professor of Commercial Law at the University of Auckland, Gehan Gunasekara, about New Zealand's data privacy laws.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.